You're listening to the Creating Your Own Path podcast, episode number 120. Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Jen Snyder, the host of Creating Your Own Path, and each week I share conversations with those working in various creative industries. We cover a lot of ground on this show, but the ultimate goal is to unearth the stories of others so that we can uncover and better understand our own. You can listen to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or your favorite podcast app. You can also catch a new episode each week at creatingyourownpath.com. Before we get into the content of today's episode, I need to talk about a few things. I am actually recording this new portion of the intro long after I had finalized this episode. I've been doing these longer interviews in advance and then segmenting them out over the course of several weeks. However, you guys, it was really important for me to head back to the original audio to add these thoughts. So specifically, I want to talk about what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia this past weekend. If you haven't heard, last Friday night, neo-Nazis, KKK members and leaders, and white supremacist hate groups gathered with torches, tiki torches, of all things. I hope they know that those are inspired by Polynesian culture, but that's beside the point. And they gathered in Charlottesville. They shouted terrible, terrible anti-Semitic and racist things, and it was incredibly shocking to see. Then Saturday happened. People died on Saturday. Many others were injured, and that happened because a group of white terrorists, let's call them what they are, think that they have been wronged. Let me be very, very clear. They have not been wronged. Several days later, the current U.S. president, who I, quite frankly, friends, I can't even say his name, decided not to take a stand against these people. Now, racism from systemic to subtle has been rampant in this country since it was founded. But never in my lifetime have I seen the person who is supposed to be the leader of the free world essentially endorse Nazis, the KKK, and white supremacists. There aren't strong enough words to describe how wrong this is. These are incredibly troubling times we're living in. In the past, I have tried to steer clear of politics on this show, but I'm not going to do that anymore. The final two interview series of this season have already been recorded, and my guests and I get into discussions about representation of people in marginalized groups, the importance of acknowledging white privilege, and how we can use our craft and platforms to do good in the world. Speaking of which, my platform is pretty tiny, but in tomorrow's Creative Digest, I am going to be sharing more thoughts on these issues and what we do now. I am always on the side of taking action, and I'm rounding up some resources that I hope will help if you are finding yourself struggling with what's happening in this country, because I know I am. At the end of this episode, I will be sharing the direct link to sign up for the newsletter, so stick around for that. Okay, that's what I need to say for now. I'm going to get back to the already recorded segment of this intro. So today, we've got the last episode in a three-part series with designer, writer, and educator Ann Dittmeyer. If you haven't listened to the last 2 weeks' worth of episodes, please do so before wrapping up the series with this episode. Trust me when I tell you it'll make everything make a little more sense. In the interview, Ann and I talk about the magic of using online tools to make offline connections and how that's been showing up in her work lately. She shares a few truth bombs about the reality behind what we all see online these days, why she thinks work should be much more playful than it is now, and some of the best ways she's been able to build relationships that can cross the online-offline barrier. Let's get to Ann. Much of your work, it kind of revolves around connecting the online and the offline world, which, again, I really admire about your work. And a really great example of that is how you've essentially made one of your jobs out of giving really interesting tours of Paris. So let's talk about the tours just a little bit. What made you decide to add those tours into the mix, kind of that first time around? Was it the platform itself that you were kind of exploring, or what made you decide to do that?
There is a couple forces, and I think it's interesting to always reflect back and see where that is. I had a friend who's now a senior art director at Airbnb who said, "Man, you'd be great at tours, and you should do these." And this is like 5 years, like four or five years ago. And then Jamie Wong, who is the CEO of Viable, she had reached out to me directly. And so when you have like the CEO of the platform reach out to you, mm-hmm. because you have a blog and an online presence and it's, you know, polished, like it's impressive. So I kind of said, why not? And at some point you just have to, you know, do it and try it. And luckily my first tour ever She was a design sponge reader, and
nice.
She happened to be tagging along on her husband's business trip, and it went really well. And so thankfully the first one went well and then went from there. But also, even without having official tours, I had 40 friends and family come visit the first year I was in grad school. So you're like a constant tour guide when you live in Paris. Kind of, it's awesome, but kind of exhausting too.
Yeah.
So it was like that. And then also I had realized I'd been blogging long enough at that point. Like, my blog was like a resource, and I was writing about Paris things, or had like a guide of the arrondissements or something like that. But I realized more and more there was the blogging community and the community beyond blogging, where everybody was writing me to say, oh, you show me around, and I didn't know who they were. So it was a way of monetizing my blog that was not advertising. So again, the blog is the business card. So, you know, the tours really became a way to monetize my blog in a very different way.
Right. And I love seeing stuff like that, because it's, again, I'm sort of in this position with this show of monetizing it is not always the best option through advertising. Sometimes it works out well, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm trying to figure out other sources of revenue that kind of spin off from this show. And thinking outside of those little boxes, like you said, that everybody else is doing, I feel like everything's becoming formulaic super fast.
Oh, yeah.
Where blogging, it took a while for it to become formulaic. I feel like things, once somebody figures out some winning combination, and I'm using air quotes there, for what works for them, they say, okay, this is the formula. That's how you have to do it, right? And so it's so cool that you found a way to do that. And, you know, it kind of ties into making those online connections offline. So you get to meet these people in person, clearly, because you're giving them a tour. And you get to find out what they like and what they don't like and what they want to see. And
I mean, recently I had like a team from Nike, and they're like doing research. And they just like booked through the site. It was like, this is so cool. And like a friend who works at Google, he's like, hey, I have a group coming. Can you show them around? I was like, yes. So I do want to move into like more of those like corporate and like research type things, but you really don't know who you're going to meet ever. And it's just really cool like that.
Yeah, that is so cool. Nike and Google, just reaching out. No big deal.
And one of my former Skillshare students who works at National Geographic now.
No way.
I was like, yep.
That is so cool.
So,
well, when I get to Paris, one of your other former Skillshare students will take
the
tour. So, you know, like I said, kind of the art of making connections both online and offline, it shows up in those Paris tours. But I'm guessing there's a lot that maybe we don't see. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm curious, what are some of the interesting ways that sort of online-offline intersection is showing up in your work these days?
One thing I do want to say on the online-offline thing, I think it's really easy to see the online world and be like, oh, Anne lives in Paris, it's so perfect. But I think it's so important to have conversations with people in real life. Even my friends here, and a lot of them are influencers or online, like, there's a whole other story behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So just always know that and don't have a complex, because there is way more to the story. And that event that looks super awesome, a lot of times if you ask somebody in person, they're like, it was kind of disappointing. So just, that's my whole disclaimer of the internet.
Yes. I would agree with all of that.
Can we use online, offline to switch gears and talk about Christine Herron and the Adobe residency?
Yes, because I think that's a really cool way that the online, offline intersection is showing up in your work these days.
Yes, because she reached out to me. I didn't know who she was, which is embarrassing to say, but it's okay. And she had emailed me spring 2015, saying she had just been awarded the Adobe Creative Residency. They get an internal mentor and somebody external in the world, and would I be interested in working with her? And so she'd been following my work for years and knew it, and she asked me to be her mentor, which she didn't really realize it, but at that time is exactly what I needed professionally, because I was, again, kind of doing the everyday grind, but not feeling as fulfilled as I wanted in the places I wanted. So yeah, it became this amazing online, offline thing. And I used every event that she was speaking at as an excuse to travel. So I got to go to Adobe Max, where she spoke in front of a crowd of like 500 people. And I got to attend all the talks, which she had to work. And then We did a little road trip afterwards, and then she did a Creative Mornings talk in Munich. And so turns out a friend of mine from Paris is the videographer now for Team Munich. And then I went to Berlin because I was like, oh, I want to introduce you to some friends there, because she was doing a different event there. So it kind of like Christine and I, like, it was like I was her mentor, but we're like super good friends now. And yeah, just to kind of connect a lot of the network I'd created in these online places and people, and then bring them to a human level whenever possible in person.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll make sure to link up to her episodes on this show, which just went live not that long ago.
Yes.
Because we had to do a shout out for you, because I was like, yes, Anne, she's wonderful. It was so cool. It was so cool to kind of like, I don't know. It's always interesting and fun for me to see like two people whose work I enjoy. Even though I've not met either of you in person, I feel like I've been following both of your work for a really long time. But like to see those connections being made, I'm like, yes, that's the perfect connection. It's amazing. So
yeah,
it was so,
I mean,
fun.
We have a running list of how we're the same person. So.
Right.
But from like two sides of the world. So
I
know,
which makes it just that much cooler, I think. So do you have any kind of one project or type of work that is the most rewarding for you in terms of this, like making connections to other people? Like what, of all the things you do, what is the most rewarding for you when it comes to making connections?
It's funny because I'm an introvert and I've been really chatty, so you might not realize that. I'm an extroverted introvert. And so I think that's one thing that people don't always realize on the internet. And that's why like 3 times a year, you'll see my picture on Instagram versus like the everyday people. But I think it's important to say that there's a place for everyone. But even being an introvert, like I love projects where I meet people and creative people and I just feel inspired. So it could be so many different ways. And Herb Lester is this independent publishing company in London, and they do these really cool maps, and they asked me to write and curate one for Paris Small Shops. And so they had asked Crispin Finn, this duo of illustrators in London, to be the illustrators. And the fact that I was in London, it was the first time they had ever had like the entire team working on a single map together in the same place.
Whoa.
So it's funny to think that like things that should be the norm aren't necessarily, but I think real-time conversations, you can solve a lot of issues, and they're not issues, but you can like work through problems even more creatively and push them even further. So I think that's really satisfying in any of my work. And I think something I'm working on really hard now is, especially when I talk or lecture, you know, you're used to the model of a teacher speaks and the students listen, but I'm really working on being as succinct as possible in responses. And you know, not muddling it like I am in this response, but also making things as interactive as possible and doing things, because learning by doing is so important. So that's something I'm really kind of working on. And again, it's all links back to like the human connection, and it makes things more memorable and, you know, comes back later.
Yeah. And I think that learn by doing type of scenario is why I found your map class to be so much fun. It's because it was a project that was like bite-sized, you know, it wasn't a whole class on how to do this thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I say so much of my work is all about like encouraging creative exploration. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for my tours, and like the tours, that approach is like how I want to do creativity coaching. I don't want to be a life coach. I don't want to be like guru, but like it's that exploration. And it's like, I'm not trying to make you a professional cartographer. If you think you're getting that, you're going to be disappointed. But
right. The
different kinds of projects that came out of that Skillshare class were amazing. Like a guy drew his commute on a banana.
Which was hilarious.
With a ballpoint pen. And he even talked about the pressure and the feeling of that pen on banana during his commute. Like, so memorable and so fun. And I think that's why I like design thinking too, because it's all about play and having fun. And I think we've just gotten so serious in the way that we work that I'm very much into disruption mode right now.
Yeah, which I love that about you. Again, it comes back to that formulaic you do this, you do this, you do this, and then the next thing happens. And then you can go a whole week without doing anything playful or fun. And that's just no way to be. So I love that. And I love that you're exploring it more. So switching gears just a little bit, quite a few questions came in from listeners about the why and the how surrounding your choice to live in Paris, which, you know, you've talked about it a little bit, but I also think it has an interesting implications for the online-offline connection because cultural differences are a thing. So I'm kind of going to mash up the questions and then just ask you this. So if you will just tell us a little bit about why you decided to make that move and be in Paris and start your business and what the process was like. You touched on it a little bit, but if you could just unpack it a little. And then has it changed the way you connect to others?
So the long story is my first trip to Paris ever was my junior year of high school with my family. We stayed in a French family's home. It wasn't even a cliche French home like apartment, but it just made it really memorable. Then I studied abroad in 2001. I arrived 2 days before 9/11, so I experienced that here. But all my classes were in my professor's homes. We'd have like tea and cookies, bring our lunch, look at slides in the living room. And with one teacher, I had French gardens and impressionism. And then we'd go see the real thing in the world. Had another teacher of photography, his amazing studio in Bastille. Like, I'm still friends to him this day. And it was just this magical winter garden. And then I had a class every Wednesday night in the Louvre, and I still didn't see it all. And so for me, I really learned that the city was my classroom and my laboratory in exploration. And I learned so much. I then had a semester at sea, like we went around the world next semester. But like when you're out in the world and you're around different cultures, you can't help but learn. And then I came back to Paris in 2003 to teach English for a year in a French high school. I really learned, I learned two things. I learned that I was always very fortunate to be surrounded by motivated people in my life, which I'd kind of taken for granted. And then second, I worked 12 hours a week and had 2 weeks of vacation every 6 weeks. And I was like, hey, this vacation thing in France is kind of interesting. So I'd been working as a graphic designer for an architecture firm in Baltimore. The economy had started to tank. And so I knew I wasn't going to get more money. So I asked for more vacation days, which I thought was very fair because I was traveling already internationally and bringing back a lot of ideas. They said no. And then I decided I was going to grad school. So I never in this whole plan ever imagined I would be starting my own business. However, during my first master's degree in Baltimore, I had a design business in class, and we had to do a 10-year life plan with four different options for like now 5 years, 10 years, 15 years or something like that. And my column D, like stretch, like I just have to fill in this chart was like start my own business and like move to France. Or I think it combined two different columns. So like I subconsciously put it on this like life chart. And I wrote that professor later and I said, thank you for making us do this exercise that you told us that we were going to hate at the time. But so it was never my real goal, but I think it's good to have these like very different alternative scenarios because you never know what life's going to throw you. So my friend Jenny always jokes that she's like, Anne, I know you love France, but you love a challenge. And it's nothing could be more true. You can read about all my adventures and bureaucracy on my blog, Prêt à Voyager.
Seriously, you guys, I'm going to interrupt you here and go read those. They're hilarious. And also they make me feel like bad for you. I mean, like a good way, I guess. I know
sometimes I was like, oh man, like that just sucked. That was 5 hours of my life. And I'm like, this is a really good story. Yeah. So a year ago, I became French. A lot of people asked me why I decided to become French. Mm-hmm. Up until then, every year I had to renew my French paperwork, which is exhausting. And when you have your own business, it's very different than when you're salaried and you have something called a fiche de paie, which is a pay slip. And so, like, you're seen as sketchy,
right?
Being in freelance. And so it was emotionally exhausting. Like, it would take a 2-3 day mental recovery period after that. And then I couldn't get after 5 years, you get, like, a 10-year card. But they wouldn't count my student years. And I was like, I went to an American-style education. I was, like, contributing to the economy because French education is, like, 500 euros a year, FYI. you know, different system. Hey, things don't always have to be the same business model. And then I was trying to get the tenure and I was like, I'm just going to start the citizenship thing. So I got rejected the first time. I kind of know why, but that doesn't really matter.
Wait, when did you start the process?
2.5 years prior to getting it, maybe.
Okay.
I applied a little bit before I'd been here for 5 years, because when you do a master's degree in France, you're supposed to be able to apply after 3 years. So the hardest thing, it was actually harder to keep my like valid carte de séjour, which validates your visa every year, and to have working rights. It's very different than a tourist visa. So like you have to be on the right kind of visa and paying taxes and being in the French system. And in the beginning, I was definitely not making that much money because I was dealing with bureaucracy all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's also why I wanted to be French, so I could like have some more time to focus on my business instead of getting documentation for government. Right. So yeah, just a bunch of different factors. And there were two other things. So like I said, I had the right to work other than salaried. The one activity that I wanted to do that had to be paid salaried was to teach. So some places would write me a contract because I have, if you can prove you're hiring somebody who has skills and competence, that's franglais, skills, well, let's just say skills, that a French person doesn't have, it's easier to hire. But some HR departments would just not even talk to me. And the second thing is, had I left France, moved back to the States, I would have lost all my tenure. So like that year, I was like sponsored by the French Cultural Ministry and got like Social Security back then to work as an English teaching assistant. Like that didn't count towards this or anything. So like I would have reset my clock. And I also like the idea of unlocking the possibility to work in Europe just as an option. Because like we live in this global world and you think you can do things everywhere. And people write me pretty often. They're like, I want to move to France. Why is nobody responding to my like job like applications? I was like, sorry, you don't have the right to work. If you're a EU citizen, it's great. So yeah, just a bunch of different things. And it was also, you know, just to prove I could do it. So it's much easier if you're married or sponsored by a company. But I feel like I like climbed the mountain. And the fact that I did it by starting my own business is like, hell yeah.
I mean, lots of bragging rights. Like, hats off to you, man. Just reading through all of your stories from prior to becoming a citizen. I can see.
I'm spare. The blog doesn't even, like, I stopped writing about it because I didn't want to get rejected.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I still have more. Like, I started a tiny newsletter called Underwater, which I think it's just / Prêt à Voyager. But because if I ever write a memoir, it's going to be, like, parallels of French swimming pools and French bureaucracy. So, like, there are a lot of funny stories there, too. So I was doing that regularly, and so maybe this summer I'll try to get back into that groove again.
Yeah, well, put that proposal together because I'd buy that book because you have a good writing style about it.
One agent wrote to me. She's like, you did a really good job with this proposal. I don't think it's going to sell, but like kudos to you. So I haven't tried pushing it beyond because like the naive part of me wants to like, I'm going to write the whole thing and then try to sell, get it picked up. And I'm like, I'm very so much. I'm like, I need the real life deadline to actually get anything done.
Oh, same here. Same here. Well, either way, people can read at least some of it on your blog. So going through all of that, like what has it taught you about connecting to other people? Because when you're doing something like that, like you said, you're kind of experiencing all of these things, whether you're in the pool or you're standing in line for the paperwork. Like how has it changed the way you connect to the world around you and to the people around you?
Well, I will say with all of it, it's important to have a sense of humor. And you'll see that in my writing because a lot of people let things get to them. And like life is really not fun if you're always that person complaining. You might call it venting, but you're probably complaining.
Right.
I've experienced that. And so I don't know, but even when things suck, you can use it as an opportunity. And people around you do really want to help you, but you just have to like think to ask and, you know, don't be offended if they don't like drop everything to help you right there, especially if you don't have a relationship with them. But it's an opportunity, and it's like my French friends who I've met, you know, I see them at parties from now and then and like now again, and they talk to me and everybody's like, oh, I see you're French, and just like a fun story. And for me, living in France and speaking French, like, I'm always joke that I'm going to be charming, but like speaking another language and just putting yourself in a slightly different bubble and exposing yourself to different things, you have a lot you can learn and can shake things up. And as you know, much as I think that a lot of things in France are extremely inefficient, and it's not customer service oriented, you can think about the things that are positive and are going well, and you kind of can mix the different cultures. So again, it comes down to having conversations. A little over a year ago, a French blogger reached out to me to start a mastermind group, and she had ideas for people on the internet that we could invite. And I said, I talk to people on the internet a lot. Like, can we do it in person? She's like, we can try it. And so having that mastermind group to like touch base with every 2-3 weeks, and we talk about our wins, our losses, or more likely struggles, and a resource. And it's really amazing just to kind of see how we've all grown since we started doing those regular check-ins. So that's kind of side tangent from your original question, but an important part of the equation, which again, it's this kind of thing that like, you probably haven't seen me talk about online because it's kind of like my secret group, but everybody's like, there are these things happening behind the scenes. So never assume you know the whole story of anything.
Oh my gosh, that is great advice. like no matter what we're talking about. And again, that's kind of why I wanted to dive in a little bit about the online, offline, I call it an intersection, you know, because things do intersect, but at the same time, what you see online versus what you see offline can be two different things. So I appreciate
they're
you.
Very different.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying
even
to
with like my but... friends. Love you, friends, but I'm just like, okay, I'm glad I know the full story.
I know. True.
But it's also like who you know. And it can be, it doesn't have to be somebody who's connected like on the internet. It could be like somebody's uncle's brother happens to run this company and was looking for somebody and you pass their name along or something like that. So like these connections can happen anywhere. So it's double-sided. And so you can get in your head or you can just be real and keep going forward on your own work. And I think that's going to be the path that takes you further.
Yes, absolutely. And something I do want to mention, and I've mentioned this, I don't know if it was somewhere I was interviewed or if it was on this show, but we have to remember that people got stuff done and they got book deals and they got jobs before the internet was a thing. So like you said, your friend's uncle's brother who owns this company, like they might not be on Twitter, but that's cool. Like they still are a really cool person to get to know.
I had this really lovely tour clients and I was like, how did you find me? And they're like, from a quilting group on Facebook. And I was like, huh. And I was like, it's like my mom's distant cousin that I've never met, but we're Facebook friends. And then she had seen somebody say something on Facebook, like that they were going to Paris. And they're like, oh, da-da. And you know, like the world, like if you let it connect for you, like it does. And you have to, like, I'm all into self-promotion and it sounds like a dirty word, but you have to share what you're working on. But the fact that like, you know, every post on my personal Facebook page isn't, this is what I tore today, this is this. It's a mix of different kinds of content. So it's not over like saturated. But then it's like when their friend at Google like decides they need somebody to give a tour, like you're the first person that comes to their mind. So it's just kind of, you know, you got to plant seeds for, you don't know what you're planting, but it's okay.
Yeah, such great advice. Okay, well, thank you, Anne, for chatting with me today. I really, really appreciate
it. A pleasure. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
This has been such a fun series to share with you guys. Remember, if you want to learn more about Anne, you can find her at annedittmeyer.com, and you can find her Prêt à Voyager blog at PRETA-VOYAGER.com, and she's over on Instagram at Prêt à Voyager. Of course, you can always come say hello to me on Instagram. I am at Jennifer E. Snyder. If you're looking for some of the resources we mentioned today in the show, I have got those all linked up over in the show notes at creatingyourownpath.com. As usual, just go ahead and look for Anne's episodes once you get there. Last but not least, if you want to hear a little bit more from Anne, I've got a special B-roll session going out in tomorrow's Creative Digest. If you're new around here, that's my weekly newsletter where I share podcast episodes, interesting stories from around the web, and other extras. Like I mentioned in the sort of updated intro of this show, I also use it to talk about the important stuff happening all around us. Signing up also gives you access to the free private Slack community for Creating Your Own Path listeners. Just head to jenniferesnyder.com/creativedigest to sign up. That's jenniferesnyder.com/creativedigest. As always, thanks for listening, and I will catch you next week.